It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. As farmers plant their crops for a new season, some farms are already rolling with products grown indoors. A decade ago, vertical farms were hailed as the future of agriculture, a cheap way to mass-produce food in urban areas with limited resources.
But the vertical farming revolution has yet to arrive. Vertical farming needs a lot of energy and poses some serious engineering problems. Despite these challenges, there are several vertical farms operating in Wisconsin.
We'll talk to one of those operators in a little bit, but first let's get an overview of the industry in Wisconsin. Johanna Osterweich is the manager of the D.C. Smith Instructional Greenhouse at UW-Madison, where she teaches classes in greenhouse management and plant care. Johanna, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Well, tell us about this basic concept for people who haven't encountered the idea. What is a vertical farm?
Yeah, so a vertical farm is literally growing plants on top of each other. You might be familiar with a typical greenhouse where we grow plants like we would in the field, all spread out. But in a vertical farm, we take those indoors, so we're not using natural sunlight, but since we have to light everything anyway, we're also growing them either in racks or trays or stacks on top of each other. But every layer has associated lights with it. So instead of using natural sunlight, we're using electrical energy to create the photons that drive photosynthesis and help the plants to grow.
I remember about 16 years ago, I was a producer here, and I booked the late Dixon DePommier. He had a book out called The Vertical Farm, and it seemed like this idea, people were really excited about this, got a lot of investment. What was the appeal, at least of the basic concept of the vertical farm?
Yeah, the first appeal is that you can grow plants anywhere and any time of year. So his proposition was to grow plants, you know, right in downtown in major cities where they're right next to the people who are going to eat them. You know, it's still a great idea. I think something that his book didn't really go into was the limitations. It was very much a think piece. And after 10 to 15 years of this concept being acted on, we're seeing some of the drawbacks and really where the sweet spot is for good vertical farms.
Yeah, we were prompted for this in part by a national article in the New York Times that it looked like a lot of investors jumped into this and tried to do this big time at scale without having worked through some of those challenges and limitations. Do you think there was some maybe unwarranted exuberance early on with this concept?
Well, I think anybody who's drawing in investors is going to build up their idea. And we see that with any sort of new investment idea. It gets people excited and makes them want to support your project. In the last, again, 10 to 15 years, we've then seen the same typical fallout that we do. One interesting thing about this is that a lot of those early investments weren't necessarily in growing produce. A lot of the early investors were drawn in because they wanted to be technology specialists. They wanted to support the company that was going to produce the technology, the systems, the racks, the hydroponics that would then be sold to other growers. So really, they were more interested in the systems, the electrical, the plumbing and ventilation than necessarily growing and selling produce. That actually is a much better profit margin, to be honest. Vertical farming is still farming, and you have very low profit margins for selling produce. So one issue that was seen in those was, well, it's not a great farm. No, but we're working on this technology that we want to sell to other folks. And that was often what was sold to the investors, was not that we were going to be a farm and sell produce, but that we were going to sell the technology to other growers. And that was where the investors were going to make back their money.
On the produce growing side of things, what were some of the biggest challenges that we started to run into as we started to really try to put these things into action?
Well, early on, one of the difficulties was that, again, they were trying to produce technology, so they maybe didn't hire plant specialists and ran into what would maybe to somebody who was a experienced plant grower seemed like obvious things. One opportunity is to convert existing buildings into farms. But you have to take into account how plants grow. Of course, you have the light issue. Hopefully that's obvious. most of our existing buildings aren't going to be set up to capture natural light, so we have to supplement. But many existing buildings aren't set up for the heavy moisture load that's produced by plants. A lot of the indoor farms are growing hydroponically, so you've got the plants growing in a nutrient-rich water, not in a potting mix or soil. And all of those plants are transpiring. They're moving that water through the roots into the plant and out the leaves, and it ends up in the air. So you end up with a building with really high relative humidity, and you may not have thought ahead about providing sufficient ventilation. And also, a lot of these old buildings are made out of steel. And steel, when it gets exposed to water, rusts. So that was, in some cases, an issue where they, you know, took an old warehouse or a downtown factory and the building started rusting around them. And that wasn't taken into account. So those are some of the things that maybe someone who's interested in a hydroponic rack might not really think about the whole environment in the way that a plant scientist would.
Another challenge is if I want to grow plants out of the ground, a key element is free, the sunlight. Whereas you mentioned, especially if I'm using an older building that isn't all made out of glass or something like that, and I'm having multiple levels, that light is an investment. The energy to produce that light is an investment.
Yeah, so you've got two investments there. You have the purchase price of the lighting fixtures, and then you have the ongoing expense of paying for electricity. And if you're trying to replace the light that plants need, especially in a vertical farm, every layer is another layer of light that you have to provide. Whereas in a greenhouse, you're going to grow in one layer and you're going to capture as much natural light as possible. And for most of the year, you'll have sufficient natural light. Maybe in the deep winter, you'll want to supplement. But in an indoor farm, it's all year round, which is the benefit. You want to be able to grow and produce anywhere at any time. But supplementing that amount of light, it's very, very different from lighting a typical office building. Our eyes adjust to lower light. Plants don't. This is their energy source. This is how they produce the sugars that we like to eat. But without sufficient light, your plants aren't going to do well. And that's an ongoing energy cost.
All that said, there are still vertical farm operations. We'll talk to one from Wisconsin in just a bit. Are there kinds of produce that, hey, it seems like this model might work better than others?
Yes, there's definitely certain kinds of produce that work better than others. And that was one of the, you know, initial ideas where we've seen the limits. You don't want to grow just anything. If this, you want crops that are short so that you can stack them up very high. You're not going to do this with apple trees, for example. So you want plants that are short in stature and that also have a very fast turnover. So the more crops you can harvest in a year, that means the more produce that you have and the more you have available for sale. So you want things with a short life cycle and a small stature. You also want to lean into plants that you get a benefit from producing them close to your consumers. So you want perishable produce, not commodity crops like corn or soybeans. You want things that are going to lose some of their nutritional value through shipping or storage. Crops that store really well, potatoes, carrots, turnips, they're not good candidates for this kind of production. You want things like leafy greens, microgreens, small berries, other kinds of small fruits that, again, you can grow quickly and you lose some of their nutritional value or their quality by shipping them long distances or trying to store them for long periods of time.
Then I imagine I'm not going to have my vertical orchard, my vertical apple orchard anytime soon. The greens seem to work pretty well. I'm guessing there's a mid-range of stuff that, hey, I could grow in my vertical farm, but if I'm competing with places with lots and lots of land and lots of labor, I can't do it in a competitive way. Do I have that right?
Yes, you're right. So again, we see mostly those leafy greens, particularly because the light requirements are lower. So again, fruits, you have to grow the plant, you have to get it to flower, and then you also have to produce this sugary fruit, and that takes a lot of light energy to do. If you're just growing the leaves of a plant, maybe the stems, then you don't need as much light. So growing microgreens or growing lettuces, arugula, that's going to take about half to two-thirds as much light as, say, growing strawberries or tomatoes or cucumbers, which have a full fruit, and you need a longer time to produce those, but also just more energy, hands down. It's interesting that you mention labor. One possible benefit to indoor farms, again, is having a labor source nearby. So when you're out in a more rural area, you may not have as many people for your labor source. Bringing the farm into the city can bring the work to the people. So it's an opportunity for employment, particularly year-round employment. Many farms are seasonal, so you have a lot of work to do during the harvesting and during the planting season, but maybe you have 4 months of winter when you don't have work for folks. So a benefit to an indoor farm would be consistent year-round employment for folks.
Interesting. Johanna, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Johanna Osterwijk is manager of the D.C. Smith Instructional Greenhouse at UW-Madison, where she teaches classes in greenhouse management and plant care. We're talking about vertical farms. Now let's turn to someone who's been running a vertical farm for a few years. Robert Carlson is co-founder of Grow Space Vertical Farm in Kenosha, which grows greens and microgreens. Robert, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What was the inspiration for opening Grow Space with some members of your family?
Yeah, so it was started by me, my dad, and my uncle. It's really been a whole family operation, including my grandma and my mom. Everybody's been involved. And what we were seeing is that we thought we could do produce better ourselves in our own house. So it was just me and my dad. We were messing around in the basement with growing plants, and then it's kind of snowballed from there into now we turned an old furniture store into a vertical farm.
And we were just talking to Johanna there. It seems like the sweet spot for produce is in those greens and herbs and microgreens and things like that. Is that where you have put most of your efforts?
Yes. Yes, it is. So we grow leafy greens, microgreens, and herbs. And we are really lucky because we got to watch all those big vertical farms fail. We started in the past 3 years. So we noticed, okay, this is what they're doing wrong. Here's what we're going to do right now that we can see exactly what doesn't work.
All right. Now, what does it take to take, you said, an old furniture building? What does it take to turn that into a vertical farm? Sounds like a lot of work to me.
Yes. And it definitely wasn't no work at all. So what we had to do is first we had to waterproof. So it was a furniture store. So it had a drop ceiling that was not going to be good for our water, right? Any humidity or moisture was going to just absorb in there and cause problems. So we switched all of that to waterproof drop ceiling. We sealed a lot of the seams in the building because it is a concrete building, which is also nice. So there's no wood or anything. It does use steel beams, and those we had to paint over, and we had to basically just make sure everything was waterproof, sealed, and tight so any humidity didn't become a problem. But those steel beams meant that we could put quite a bit of weight onto the floor so we can build out to all the systems that we need.
Now, I want you to paint us a picture. I walk into this former furniture store, now a vertical farm. What do I see?
Yeah. So you literally just walk right into our lobby, and then there is a beautiful window that goes directly into the farm. So the whole wall, right when you walk in, looks into this farm, and is these basically these massive tubes that have all these plants coming out of them. They're actually like beautiful. Like if you saw them at a park or something, they would be like artistic even. And these beautiful towers grow plants coming right out of them. So you basically walk into this wall of beautiful green and these beautiful towers, bright lights. It's a very futuristic looking building when you walk in.
You mentioned learning from the failures of a lot of other operations that kind of went in not knowing what they were doing. Have you run into obstacles early on that you had to say, oh, nope, we didn't get that quite right? What sort of things did you have to overcome along the way?
So we did have to overcome quite a bit. So early on, we figured out the business model that would work best. And that was we're direct to consumer. So people, we have a storefront, people walk in, people get greens. Then we sell directly to restaurants. So that was the first hurdle, is we noticed that, okay, so these basically they're plugging themselves into the system where people can't really appreciate the local grains. So we're direct to consumer. And then what we've run into as well is basically it's an old furniture store, right? So we run into issues where like, oh, the air conditioning's not powerful enough or the heat's not powerful enough. So a lot of it was, okay, we got the base building correct. Now, oh, we got to do a little more work. We got to put in a new furnace. We got to do this, that, and the other thing to make the space work to grow produce like this.
Now, what do you see as the advantages of vertical farming for products like the ones you're doing and having it, you know, not necessarily out in the country, but in a place like Kenosha?
Yeah. So the big benefits that our customers like is the freshness. That's what everybody absolutely loves. The greens are 2 weeks fresher than they can get from the store. Plus, they have the roots still attached because they're not in soil. That makes the plants last quite a bit longer. And on top of that, we're able to grow without spraying any chemical pesticides, which has some pretty big sustainability benefits, along with the fact that we use a lot less water. At Grow Space, we use around 92% less water, and you can, with hydroponics, get as much as 97% less water usage.
And how about the light issue that I was talking to Johanna about? She said the greens that you're doing, those are the least light hogging of the produce options out there. What do you do to give them the appropriate amount of light?
Yeah, so LED technology is what makes all this possible. It's efficient enough that you can afford the electricity bill every month, and they're able to get the brightness that the plants need to grow. So because of the energy cost, our greens are a little bit more expensive than you would see from the store. But really, that's the only negative that comes from the energy. We get all the benefits of being indoors and year round for a small premium at the end of the day. So basically, we just pay the electricity bill.
Now, Robert, you've got the old furniture store converted into the vertical farm. Is the vision for the future, hey, this is the right size, this is what we want to keep going? Or do you have a notion that, hey, we might want to have a different building, another building to expand this?
Yeah, that's a good question. And what we kind of imagine is that small farms like these will be the standard. Instead of these massive warehouses that get converted into vertical farms, it'll be much smaller buildings like ours, where basically the farm serves just their own community, and that's all it does. So if we were to expand, it would probably be to another building to get that community the greens they need.
Is there another kind of produce you'd want to try, taking the lessons you've learned and the lessons from other failed projects?
Yes, there are. So we would love to do tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, produce like that. But for those, what we'll probably do is we'll probably just do it in a greenhouse instead of doing it indoors, just because of that, you know, that high energy price. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how that does actually end up working out. We're probably a few years away before we're really at a scale that we can, you know, invest in that.
And finally, what are your favorite greens to eat?
My favorite greens to eat. I love our romaine, but that might just be because that's what we grow the most of, so I get to eat the most of it. But it probably is either romaine. I do like our butter crunch as well. Broccoli microgreens as well. Lots of good stuff. I like it all, frankly.
Robert, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Robert Carlson is co-founder of Grow Space Vertical Farm in Kenosha. Earlier, we heard from Johanna Osterwijk, who manages a greenhouse and teaches about greenhouse management at UW-Madison. We've been talking about vertical farming here in the state.